Hello, and welcome to the Written World Podcast.
Today we're going to be talking about House of Hunger by Alexis Henderson.
And this is number 10 on our 2022 Reading Challenge, which is a 2022 publication. This book came out this year. We are on the cutting edge.
You should be really impressed with us, considering we actually had the numbers pulled up this time.
Yes, it was Izzy's idea. So thank her so that we didn't stand here going, but I guess we're making up for it now. But yes, this was, we were reading this, we started reading this like kind of still in the spooky time. But then, as we all know, we go from spook season right to the new year. Everything moves so fast. And so, it is no longer the spook season. This is a horror book, but that's okay. You can read whatever you want all year round. But we have both, I think, been trying to like kind of get into the holiday or like seasonal vibe with our reading recently. Personally, I purchased two little books. I got Just Christmas with L.M. Montgomery, which has a bunch of little stories, and I bought it simply because it looked cute and I read a couple pages and I was like, yes, I like the vibes. And then I bought Edith Wharton's, no, Edith Wharton is the title. It's by Ethan Frome, I guess. And it looks all wintry on the cover. So we'll see how those go. What about you, Izzy?
Currently, I am reading The New Adventures of Helen, which is by Ludmila Putrescaya, which is translated by Jane Bugaeva. Yeah. Anyway, which is a collection of Russian folk tales that are originally written in Russian and have been translated. I got this like over a year ago at the first time I went to the Strand in New York City. So that's very fun. I decided to read it right now because I feel like I associate fairy tales with Christmas time. Yeah. If anyone has any good Nutcracker retellings, I would be super happy to read those. I haven't found one that I've liked yet, so I'm thinking about writing one at some point, but yeah. Anyway, please don't recommend me the one by Gregory Maguire who wrote Wicked because I read it and I hated it. So please refrain.
I really want to see the Nutcracker Ballet because I never have, and like ballet was like a decent part of my life. And I really want to see the Nutcracker, but also I feel like it'll just make me sad that I can't dance like them. That's how I always feel about going to the ballet, which like it's fine. I'm over it. I've moved on. I have other interests in life. Dance is cool. but also, did you watch the as a child? Or recently, the Barbie and the Nutcracker Prince.
Yes, I did.
That is seared into my memory. Like that was like when I was a little kid, I had a TV in my room. I don't even have a TV in my room now, but I did then. I had a little tiny box TV and I had a VHS player, and I would watch Barbie and the Nutcracker Prince every night. Like I would fall asleep to it, and then I remember like years and years later, probably the last time there was a working VHS player in existence, I like played it back just to I don't know why, and like the way the dialogue took me back, I'm like, this is what I fell asleep to every night. It was crazy.
Oh my
So that's
gosh,
in my brain
yes.
forever.
See, the Barbie movie that was in my brain forever was The Princess and the Pauper, which is like the
Oh yeah,
first
that
musical
was the big
one.
one.
That was the huge one. I dressed up as Erica for like my fourth birthday. Yeah.
I was Annalise for my kindergarten Halloween, which means that was the same year because I'm older than you. Maybe
That's
not. It might have been a year
amazing.
apart.
But it's close enough.
Oh no, I love my sister will still rewatch that, and the thing is, the music is so good.
It
Like, why isn't there a musical? I really want to make one out of it, but I'm sure Mattel won't want me to do that.
I mean, what does Mattel have to lose? Like, they'll just get more money.
True, true. Oh, love Princess and the Pauper.
Yeah. I've been meaning to rewatch it, and now I want to rewatch the Nutcracker one because I love Nutcracker retellings, but I feel like there's never one that like really gets at everything that I want, so I just want to watch all of them and piece them all together in my brain.
I tried. Okay, so I was like wanting to get into the holiday spirit, and I had heard on a podcast about a book about like a little holiday themed romance, and I don't read romance. It's not my thing. I don't really have anything against it. I just never did, and so I never do. You know, like I never thought about it, and so I never picked them up. But this one I was like, I don't know. I think the day I listened to that podcast, I was feeling particularly festive, and I was like, oh, this sounds like it could actually be kind of cute. Like kind of fun, like the plot is interesting. And so I started listening to it as an audiobook because of who I am as a person. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Like it was so smutty. I almost threw up.
Oh
I was like, I
no.
knew there had to be some because that's what I was getting into. Like, I really should have like known what I was getting myself into. But I was like, you know what? I never do this. Like, let me try it. I couldn't. I'm like, I'm gonna die. I can't. I can't. It's, ugh, I can't do it. I get that that's your thing, but mm-mm. So I really tried. I tried to read a cute little holiday romance, and I couldn't do it. I gave it up.
Yeah, I don't particularly read romance either, but also I'm always here for smut, so I find this very amusing.
And maybe it's that it was an audiobook. 'Cause I don't think I don't
yeah.
like that definitely didn't make it better. Yeah. I tried. And actually, even then, even like, there was a day where I was like painting or running or something where I usually listen to something. And I was like looking for something, like, none of my podcasts like had been recently released. And I didn't really have any other audiobooks going. And I was like, maybe I'll go back to it. No. No. Oh, so.
I definitely don't know if I could listen to Smut while running. Like, I feel like
Yeah,
that's
well,
really
and I mean,
like.
I listen to crazy shit when I'm doing a variety of things, but I guess I was like, no, it's not a good idea. It's not an ideal scenario, and so I stopped.
If you were in like a rom-com or something, you would be like running while listening to the Smut and then like trip or something and then like fall into the arms of like.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, this is like a new meet cute.
But this is how it would tie together because I would, for some reason, maybe I'm broke or maybe I'm just like a hipster, but I would have wired headphones and they would rip out and then the smut would play out loud. And then the person who caught me would actually be the audiobook reader reading the smut. That's how it would go. Maybe I should write it. Maybe I should write smut and that's where I'm going wrong. I'm just on the wrong end of it.
Yeah. There you go.
That's been my holiday reading experience.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking, I was like, this person either has to be like the actor reading the audiobook or like the author or some kind
Oh, the
of
author. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
tie-in.
All right, well, should we get into House of Hunger?
Yes, I think we should. Speaking of sexy.
True.
Okay, so House of Hunger. I guess I will read the Goodreads synopsis. Well, not a synopsis, the summary. I always mix those two words up, even though they mean very similar things. But in like the literary world, if you're submitting a manuscript, a synopsis versus a summary is very different than in the colloquial world.
True.
Anyway. Okay. So I'm gonna read the whole thing. It's a little long, but I feel like it bears speaking. Wanted, blood maid of exceptional taste, must have a keen proclivity for life's finer pleasures. Girls of weak will need not apply. A young woman is drawn into the upper echelons of a society where blood is power in this dark and enthralling gothic novel from the author of The Year of the Witching, which is Alexis Henderson. Marion Shaw has been raised in the slums where want and deprivation is all she knows. Despite longing to leave the city and its miseries, she has no real hope of escape until the day she spots a peculiar listing in the newspaper seeking a blood maid. Though she knows little about the far north, where wealthy nobles live in luxury and drink the blood of those in their service, Marion applies to the position. In a matter of days, she finds herself the newest blood maid at the notorious House of Hunger. There, Marion is swept into a world of dark debauchery, and at the center of it all is her, Countess Elizabeth, who presides over this hedonistic court, is loved and feared in equal measure. She takes a special interest in Marion. Elizabeth is magnetic, and Marion is eager to please her new mistress. But when her fellow blood maids begin to go missing in the night, Marion is thrust into a vicious game of cat and mouse. She'll need to learn the rules of her new home and fast, or its halls will soon become her grave. Dun dun dun.
I was thinking the same thing. Thank you for reading that. Sometimes I feel like, ugh, like I should come up with my own summary, but someone was already paid to do that. So honestly, it would be disrespectful, and this way we know we're not like spoiling things that people aren't already spoiled about.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like that summary writer really challenged me to like remember how to pronounce all of these words. So I mean,
True.
echelon, that's something you don't see written down often. So like that was very good job,
I
summary writer.
saw a TikTok recently that was like one of those words that you may have learned from reading and therefore mispronounce. And the first couple were like real, and then it devolved into like completely wrong pronunciations, but it would be like something like breath. And then it's pronounced breath, and then like wreath, but they pronounce it breath. And because Justin's first language is not English, I decided to see how that would go. And for a while, he was like, "Oh, okay." And then he was like, "Wait." And then they were like, instead of breasts, it was breasts, and he was like, "Wait a second."
Incredible.
I love your Christmas tree. It's so nice and
It
pretty.
turned on.
Yeah, it got all of a sudden dark and then it went.
Yeah, it's on a timer, so
Oh, that's
it did
cool.
a thing. Yeah, thank you. It's my first like year in my own place, so I kind of went all out for Christmas.
I saw like your festive pillows and everything. I love it.
We made a fake chimney behind my couch, with some like brick wallpaper, and then we hung the stockings on it. And it's so adorable. I think after the holidays are over, I'm not gonna take the wallpaper down because it's like actual nice looking brick. So I'm gonna leave it. And then I was talking to
Exposed
Kylie
brick.
earlier. Exposed brick. But I was talking to Kylie earlier about painting a portrait of my cat, and I was gonna hang that in the center of the chimney. So it was like this special, like, little antique looking thing, because my apartment is full of that stuff. So.
I love that idea so much. Oh my gosh. I think you should put a picture of this on your on our Instagram of the mantle and then or chimney and then well, of course, the painting when it's done.
Yeah,
Basil can be
I'm
our
down for
mascot.
that. Honestly, he's the mascot of my life, so I'm here for that.
All right, so what were your first impressions of House of Hunger?
I think rather than impressions, I feel like I can speak more to expectations. I was really excited by the idea of like queer gothic romance. I guess it's not really a romance, but kind of is. Like queer gothic story, I think gothicism, that's not a word. I think that the gothic genre in general is inherently queer on so many levels, sometimes purposefully. I think all times purposefully, either as a comment on queerness, as a sort of way of putting down queerness or as a way of like sort of exploring and uplifting that. So I think that that playing into that tradition was really important to me, and I was really excited about that. And also like blood consumption and cannibalism is always really interesting to me. So I was really excited about that. I don't actually want to eat people. I think that's gross. But I like it explored in fiction.
Imagine
So,
you're like a
those.
hardcore vegan and you just said that.
I know. That would be like really like I'm a hardcore vegan, but like I'm really into cannibalism.
As a trope, as a trope.
As a trope. Sorry, let's tag that on in our tag. I'm just like imagining like 20 years in the future, like a sound bite coming out of me being like, I'm really into cannibalism.
It like
I can.
replays on the news. They make it into one of those songs.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So I got okay, and I feel shitty saying this as someone who has never written a full book, but I got first novel vibes very strongly.
Yes, I agree.
And I almost can't even explain why. And okay, like for reference, as we kind of already said, this is Alexis Henderson's second novel. I didn't read the first one. They're not in this, it's not a series, they're separate. but anyway, I don't know. It just like nothing bad, really. I mean, like nothing overtly bad, just very first novel vibes.
I think I might be able to explain.
Please do.
Okay, so because you named something I was feeling that I didn't know that was so that like very cool. But as per first novel vibes, I felt like the world building was really shallow. There wasn't a lot there. There could have been a lot there, but she didn't focus on it, so which is fine. That's if it's not the focus of your novel, it's not. But like, I felt that the romantic relationships are this like idealization of abusive people and like someone just being like, yeah, I love this person, felt very first novel. I think that the romantic relationships felt underdeveloped, which also felt very first novel. And there was something else. Oh, and the way that tropes were utilized felt very first novel. Oh, and the language was dealt very first novel. It is
Yeah,
not to say that
yeah.
the entire book was bad, because it
Yes,
wasn't.
I don't think like first novel and like bad are synonymous. It's just like I don't know. Like sometimes I like okay. I went to see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Very fan fictiony. Very fan fictiony. I had a great time. It was very good. I would see it again. so like I don't think they're like necessarily bad. It's just like, I don't know, it just stands out. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to make sure that we get back to like how you were saying how the tropes were used. So I'm just gonna write that down. So if I don't come back to that, definitely come back to that.
Okay.
Okay, we could do couldn't pick it up, couldn't put it down.
Sure. What is a very ambivalent number? I suppose a five. Yeah, a five. Okay.
Just chugging tea over here. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't have a strong answer for this one.
No, I just remember listening to it and at times like listening to it back to back, but then like putting it down for like a week and then picking it back up again. Which is never good for the reading experience for me personally, but
Same. One thing I do have strong feelings about are the characters. Lizaveth, no redeeming qualities in my book. There was nothing to like about her. Like, she was pretty. She presumably had a lot of money. Those things are nice, but like, I didn't get it. I mean, so I guess that's kind of first novel-y, like, it's just pure infatuation. Like, I just felt like she had no redeeming qualities. I understand that, Marion, like, hadn't had a lot of love in her life, and like, she was given some attention, and that can look like love, and like, that kind of reels you in, but so like, okay, sure. But just as a character, I'm like, you're not even really that interesting. You just kind of suck. Literally.
Yeah, I think that was one of my qualms with their relationship is that like Elizabeth wasn't super developed. And I think that there was room for a lot of complexity there that like was hinted at slash like overtly written about, which I'm not going to talk about to not spoil anything. But I think that that complexity could have been expounded on and made a really like complex, well-rounded character where like the reader's like, oh, this person sucks, but like I still like them, or like I'm still invested in their relationship going well, or yeah, I don't know, like she gave mommy vibes, and I guess Marion was into
Well,
that.
yeah, she didn't, Marion didn't have like much of a family, so maybe.
Damn.
Just psychoanalyzing. I guess that's what you're supposed to
Yeah.
do. I felt like a lot of the secondary characters were kind of like throwaway. Some of them felt kind of interchangeable.
Yeah. There was kind of a lot of them for how much focus was not spent on them. And I
Yes.
do think, yeah, I do think I did like the other Blood Maids and thought that they were interesting characters, but they also just felt like they had one personality trait, and that was like their personality trait for the rest of the work. So they weren't really dynamic, which is fine because they weren't really being focused on, but still, I'm not sure why there were, had to be so many, or there had to be so many that had to be named and have interactions with, whereas there could have just been a lot, and then maybe like more time was spent developing the more principal characters. I don't
Yeah,
know.
yeah. Yeah, I definitely see that. Okay, we're talking some shit. What did you like about this book?
Okay, so I was reading this review that I think put it into words that I obviously can't cite, but put it into words well. And they said something along the lines that like queer people being queer and being a person of color wasn't an issue in this novel, which is really nice to see. I think that that's super important, and especially in like, well, it's important everywhere, but like in our society, people are like vilified or marginalized or oppressed for those reasons. And I think in fantasy worlds, when people do those things, not as commentary, but just as, oh, this is the way that things are, that's really lazy and really unhelpful. So I think that what Henderson is doing there is really cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, for all the lack of world building, that was nice to have there. Yeah, I thought the premise was really interesting. It made me think of Catherine House. I'll link that in the show notes. I don't remember the author, but it's kind of like it's about an exclusive like sort of college, pre-college situation. That has, like, there's obviously something dark. It's a boarding school. There's always something going amiss at a boarding school. But anyway, it has, like, those kind of similar sort of, like a gothic feel, but it's, like, a more contemporary book. I don't know. And I like, thought the premise of, like, all these people being stuck somewhere that is very extravagant, but also has these undertones of something is up. I always think that kind of thing is interesting.
Okay, I feel like when it comes to gothic novels specifically, I'm always really picky because I'm looking for a specific experience that I'm trying to replicate, and that's very like difficult to actually do. And it's not that it's an experience I've necessarily had, but one that I've like held in the insides of myself, which is very weird. Anyway, so I just think that like as a person who thinks about like gothic horror a lot and who has read some of it, I just wasn't impressed on the utilization of the tropes. Like I thought that there could be some more compelling things there than, oh, we're in a big, I mean, one of the reasons I was really excited about this work is because I was like, oh, they're in a big spooky house, isolated in this one area. And like, I felt like that was like a non-issue. And I wanted that to be an issue. I wanted the house to fight back or like to also be something that was like living and breathing and like contributing to this like consumption that was happening. And I feel like it really wasn't. And that's okay, but I'm always interested in the ways that like houses reflect like human beings, bodies, like personhoods. So,
Ooh.
yeah.
I thought of something that I liked, actually. And by that, I mean I
Go
looked at my notes and remembered.
ahead.
So I feel like this book is written like a movie in a good way. Like it plays out like it should probably be a movie. Well, anyway, let's skip that thought.
I would watch this movie.
I would watch it too. Like it really unravels like a movie. Like you open it and it starts. And it like goes right into the plot the same way I really feel like a screenplay would. Not that I'm an expert in that or anything, but I don't know, that's just what the way things were revealed felt like a movie. And it moved quickly and the structure was like easy to get a grip on and understand, and that like pretty much continued throughout the book. There wasn't a lot of like unnecessary conversations and stuff. Like there wasn't a lot of things. Like sometimes I read a book and I'm like, "Oh, this is interesting, but it would probably get cut out if this was made into a movie." And there wasn't a lot of that in here. So that was cool. That was cool and fun. I would watch the movie. On the other hand, this kind of, I guess, ties into something I didn't like. I think there were some inconsistencies here, and I'm not here to just point out the inconsistencies. I feel like I do that a lot, but I'm gonna do it. At the beginning of the novel, when Marion is presented with the idea that she could be a very good blood maid, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I never thought about that. I never thought I could do that. Wow, what a great idea that would solve all my problems. But then later they're like, oh yes, Marion was always going to be, like, she always wanted to be a blood maid since the first time that she saw a blood maid being bled. And I was like, wait, but no, maybe, but then why was she so, like, why didn't she do it earlier? You know, like, if it had always been in her head, she'd been in a desperate situation for a while, why didn't she just go and be a blood maid? Like, why, what, why now, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because yes, at the beginning it was like, oh, I'd never really considered it before, but then there was a lot of backstory about her seeing a blood maid and then
Yes.
being really intrigued by it. So
Did she
like,
just
why
forget?
wouldn't she be thinking about that? Yeah, that's interesting. I do think that there is merit for like why she hadn't done it already, but like not gonna say why 'cause spoilers.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just it just like it seemed like the thought had never occurred to her, and that until the day that the taster shows up, but then there is the backstory, and I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I this your comment about it feeling like a movie sort of like reminded me of something I didn't like. I did think that it had a very like quick paced quality. And I think part of that quick pace is that the language isn't very flowery, which is totally fine. But I do think that there was like a lot of repetition of the same words, like over and over, like same sentence structures slash words over and over again, which I feel like I maybe noticed more because I was listening to it. But I also notice that kind of thing when I read it. But anyway, so like that bothers me that there's not like a differentiation in like the type of language being used. I don't think that it needs to be highfalutin or like non-casual or any of those things. Like I appreciated that it wasn't. But I do think that there was like room for just like word choice differences rather than like using the same thing over and over again, because then it just gets repetitive in the reader's brain. At least for me.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. And as someone who does read a lot of audiobooks, I don't always notice that. Like, it's not something I notice a lot. So like when I do, it stands out, and I do remember noticing it in this book. Because also the book I just finished like an hour ago as an audiobook, it was so bad. Like every sentence was the same. I'm like, did I accidentally rewind? So like I don't know. The fact that I notice when it happens, I don't know, tells me that it doesn't always happen, I guess, is what I'm saying. But yeah, I see what you mean.
I also had a thought about Lizaveth, and like we were talking about how we didn't really like her character or think that she's well developed enough. But in also in the frame of like giving a little bit of props to the author, I feel like if she were a man, that wouldn't be as much of a problem. Like in our society, do you know what I mean? Like I feel like in the past, we've been given like hot romantic leads that are men who have been built upon the same kind of foundations and been like, yeah. So I don't know. You know, like I'm wondering if there's a difference there or if there's not. And just like what that means that like now, I don't know. For me specifically, like now that I'm older and reading something, do I expect more out of queer relationships in fiction than I do out of heterosexual ones? And or at least between like mask femme relationships, and like I'm like, yeah, I guess that I do expect queer relationships like explicitly, because you can still have queer relationships that are male female, that are explicitly not male female. Like I feel like I do expect more from them, and I'm thinking about how that might be like problematic on my end, just because but like as a queer person, I also like want more positive representation, and positive representation can also look like, look at this shitty queer person doing these shitty things, because like queer people are human, in this case kind of human. So yeah, so I don't, that's just like food for thought kind of thing.
I think that's a really good point. I think from my reading experience, I think that's probably true. Like I think if this was like an explicitly male female relationship, like heterosexual relationship, I think I still would have noticed, like, this guy sucks. Why does she like him? But I don't think it would have bothered me or stood out to me as much. I'd just be like, oh, it's just another like romance trope. Like, he
Yeah, I was
just
like, because I
sucks
feel
and
like
weird.
that's, and we're accepting it. Like, I feel like that's more normal.
Yeah, I think you're very, very right. Another thing that bothered me. Honestly, should have seen this one coming. So like I'm not like the idea of blood doesn't like freak me out. Like I could see blood and be okay. What does freak me out is how they get the blood. Needles going into bodies, anything really, piercing skin. Yeah, not really into that. And then from there, then I was getting the heebie-jeebies. Okay? I was getting the heebie-jeebies. And then it did start to bother me, like just like blood being in cups and stuff. I'm like, that's so much. There's so much blood. obviously I should have seen this come. I knew the premise of the book. I should have thought, like, they have to get the blood. Somehow, maybe this will be a little bit difficult to read. It got a little difficult to read. I had to, like, I was like, I am bothered. I'm a little bit, not queasy, but like, ugh. Yeah, so, like, I don't know if you're really sensitive to that stuff. Maybe skip this one. I really tried to be, like, I think I'm talking very loudly right now. I tried to, like, replace it with different words. I'm like, what if this is a different bodily fluid? Or, like, what if this was just, I just replaced it all together. It didn't help. So, yeah, maybe if you're, like, really sensitive to the whole, like, blood, thing, or, like, the acquiring of blood, maybe that's super obvious. Maybe you're like, oh yeah, don't like blood, I'm gonna skip this one. Well, it wasn't obvious to me, so there's the thought. Maybe just pay a little bit of attention. I don't know, did that bother you?
The blood didn't really bother me, but like there are some descriptions that are like really gruesome.
Yeah, like when she
Yeah, like that really bothered me. I was like, oh god, and I was like listening to it, so I was like, oh, that's in my ears.
yeah, like descriptions of like
just of like ailments. Physical violence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, icky.
Yeah, that wasn't a lot.
Was it what you expected?
No. Like, yes, but no. I had a feeling that it was going to turn out this way. But also, I had high hopes. And I feel like that's usually how reading with preconceived notions goes for me. So.
That's fair. Yeah. I think it was, like, mostly what I expected. I think, yeah, I guess I expected maybe a little bit more complexity, but I don't know. I feel like I could say that, but maybe that's not actually true. I wished for more complex relationships, I think.
Yeah, I think that there was, like, there was a lot of foundation to be built upon in, like, really good ways that just, like, sort of wasn't, and that's fine, too. But our longings.
First novel vibes.
Okay, so I think that in order to talk about what we're reading next, we have to tell everyone what we did.
We did something super fun. Okay, so we were looking. Well, no, we don't have to get into that whole thing right now. that could be another episode. We have to talk about. Okay, so if you look at our little 2022 reading challenge, you look all the way down to number 15. You see Izzy picks for Kylie and Kylie picks for Izzy. How fun! And as we were evaluating our reading for this year, I thought, wow, it's getting to the holiday season. What if we do this one now? There's not that much time left in 2022, so what if we do this one now and we don't tell each other what we're picking? We just send them in the mail to each other. And then you like have a fun little thing to unwrap, and then that's like the book we read. So yeah, so Izzy sent me a book and I sent Izzy a book, and we're gonna read them.
Yeah, it's so exciting. So Kylie sent me How to Be Eaten by Maria Adelman, which I've been wanting to read for a really long time and keep like subtly thinking about. And when I got it, I got really excited, and it smells like new book. Anyway, it's like fairy tale retellings, or a retelling. I don't know if it's one or if it's no. It's yeah, it's one, and it's like these women meet around in New York City, in a support group to go through their traumas. But like their traumas are fairy tales, so like I'm really excited, and the cover's really creepy, which I love.
I heard about that book on a podcast, and Izzy and I have been talking about, like, where in the list it was going to fit, like, when we were going to do it, and then so when we decided to do things this way, when we decided to do things this way, I was like looking for other books that maybe fit, but this one, like, it was just so perfect for Izzy that when I heard about it on the podcast, I stopped everything and I wrote it down and we talked about it like 4 different times. And then there was just no other choice and I had to do this. So.
Oh, can I read the like book jacket description?
Yes, go for it.
Okay. All right. In present day New York City, 5 women meet in a basement support group to process their traumas. Bernice grapples with the fallout of dating a psychopathic, blue-bearded billionaire. Ruby, once devoured by a wolf, now wears him as a coat. Gretel questions her memory of being held captive in a house made of candy. Ashley, the winner of a bachelor-esque dating show, wonders if she really got her promised fairy tale ending. And Raina's love story will shock them all. Though the women start out wary of one another, judging each other's stories, gradually they begin to realize that they may have more in common than they supposed. What really brought them here? What secrets will they reveal? And is it too late for them to rescue one another? Dark, edgy, and wickedly funny, this debut for readers of Carmen Maria Machado, Kristen Arnett, and Kelly Link takes our coziest, most beloved childhood stories, exposes them as anti-feminist nightmares, and transforms them into a new kind of myth for grown-up women. And reading that again makes me so excited that I want to stop everything and just go huddle in a corner and, like, read this all night long.
Woo! So, Izzy sent me The Past is Red by Catherine M. Valente. I'm so excited. First of all, I'm obsessed with... The cover is beautiful. I'm like showing it to you as if you are the audience. I think the cover is so cool. It's like the perfect size to fit in my hands. It's a little hardcover, and I'm very excited to read it. We read what was Space Opera by Catherine M. Valente. So we've read one of her books on the podcast, but Izzy is a big fan. And yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say The Grass Cutting Sword I read for my thesis and, like, was kind of life-changing. So, anyway.
Well, while I have not read the book that I sent to Izzy, Izzy has read this, which will probably make for more interesting conversations. But I also do plan to read How to Be Eaten. Let me tell you a little bit about this one. My name is Tetley Abednego. And I am the most beloved girl in Garbage Town. I'm 29 years old. Everything is the same and everything is different. And I suppose that is what it means to stay alive this long. Wait. There's a summary in here. That's an excerpt.
That's part of... It's okay. That's the beginning of the second section.
Okay. So, here's what this book's about, folks. The future is blue. Endless blue, except for a few small places that float across the hot, drowned world left behind by the long-gone fossil fuel guzzlers. I'm already obsessed. I love this shit. I know it's depressing, and sometimes I'm like, I read so many, like, post-apocalyptic things. I'm like, I don't know, I feel like I'm, like, jinxing myself or something, like karma or something. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm just reading books, but I'm like, oh, I love these books, but I don't want the apocalypse. I just think it's interesting. Anyway.
It's like the cannibalism thing.
Yeah, it honestly is. Yeah. One of those patches is a magical place called Garbage Town. Tetley Abednego is the most beloved girl in Garbage Town, but she's the only one who knows it. She's the only one who knows a lot of things. That Garbage Town is the most wonderful place in the world, that it's full of hope, that you can love someone and 66% hate them all at the same time. But Earth is a terrible mess. Hope is a fragile thing, and a lot of people are very angry with her. Then Tetley discovers a new friend, a terrible secret, and more to her world than she ever expected. Oh, I'm so excited. And
Yay!
Oh, and it's, like, so small. I, like, will feel like I'm making progress as I read it. I don't know. I didn't realize I was such, like, a small book gal. But that's the theme of this episode. Yes, this is a perfect pick. This is the exact kind of thing I love to read. Thank you, Izzy.
Oh, I'm so glad, because the process of figuring out what to send you, I was going to send, like, 2 other books before I picked this one. And I was like, okay, but something's not sitting right. And so then I kept going, and then I was like, wait, I just read this, and Kylie would love this. She loves apocalyptic stuff. And it's funny. Kylie's funny. And so I was like, what is it?
I love the tone of the synopsis. Yeah, I love the tone. I love the, like I even Oh, I did like an unboxing video. I don't know if I'll use it for anything, but every so often I like this seems like a good idea for something. I could use this content for something. So I recorded an unboxing video and I read the back of it 'cause I'm a moron. And but anyway, it was very like monologue-ish. I don't know if I'm just like in the mode of reading like scripts and stuff, but it felt very like I'm into this. I don't know. It had a lot of character.
Yeah, I think that the driving point of this book isn't necessarily the plot, but is just Tetley's voice and like narration.
Yes, the voice,
So,
that's what, yes.
yeah, like okay, the first like two lines of the book are three lines, I guess, because there's two first short sentences and then the long one. Like best thing ever. So great. I'm definitely not either, but I was like, I just sat there for a second and was like, okay, anyway. Chapter one, Nihilist. My name is Tetley Abenango, and I'm the most hated girl in Garbage Town. I am 19 years old. I live alone in Candlehole, where I was born, and have no friends except for a deformed gannet bird I've named Grape Crush, and a motherless elephant seal cub I've named Big Bargains, and also the hibiscus flower that has recently decided to grow out of my roof, but I haven't named it anything yet.
That's hilarious. I think my mom would love this too already.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Well, so that is what we're reading next. We're each reading something different, and we will come together and speak about it, as well as hopefully the rest of our 22 reads. We'll do like a little wrap up. Fingers crossed. yeah, but TBD on when that will emerge. But yeah, that's all for today, unless you have anything else.
No, that's it for me.
And so, thank you for listening, and we'll see you back here next time on the Written World Podcast.